overnight. I recognize that today's news carries a particular importance because it's not just any company we're talking about. It's GM. It's a company that's not only been a source of income, but a source of pride for generations of auto workers and generations of Americans. But while the GM of the future will be different from the GM of the past, I am absolutely confident that if well managed, a new GM will emerge that can provide a new generation of Americans with the chance to live out their dreams, that can outcompete automakers around the world, and that can once again be an integral part of America's economic future. And when that happens, we can truly say that what is good for General Motors and all who work there is good for the United States of America. Thank you, everybody.
President Obama in the grand foyer of the White House speaking about the future of General Motors. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. With me here in the studio, Scott Horsley, NPR White House correspondent, Frank Langfitt, who covers the auto industry for NPR. Also with us, David Wilna on Capitol Hill. He's NPR's congressional correspondent. In about 8 or 9 minutes or so, scheduled to hear the General Motors President Fritz Henderson at a news conference in New York to talk more about the details of what President Obama just announced. But Frank Langfitt, as he talked about the future of General Motors, he talked about the sacrifices involved. He's focused particularly on the auto workers who face, he said, difficult times ahead. Nevertheless, sacrifices also for shareholders, for bondholders, for taxpayers, too.
Yeah, I think that the reality of this is a bit of a salvage job. He recognizes, and he's being honest with people, that more people are going to lose jobs. There's going to be a lot more pain after, frankly, years of pain in the upper Midwest. One thing I wanted to focus on that he said, he talked about the end of an old GM and the beginning of a new GM. And what you're going to hear from Fritz Henderson, I'm sure, in the next, you know, in about 8 or 9 minutes, is talking about this as a new beginning for the company and a new chance and, frankly, a last chance. Obviously, it's a really dark day for American business. It's a very bad day for the American auto industry. But I think what GM hopes to do here is have a chance to really survive. And they'll see this as successful if in 2 to 3 years they can become profitable and without all of this debt be able to move forward.
Scott Horsley, this is a tremendous risk for the President of the United States. He has ventured into, uncharted waters in terms of American capitalism. The United States is now the principal shareholder of General Motors. It's an unthinkable thought.
Well, but it's a little bit more thinkable based on what we've seen over the last couple of months. And, you know, he was standing in the very same spot where a month ago he was standing when Chrysler filed for bankruptcy. And he began by talking about what he called the remarkable success of that process, a success that a lot of people were skeptical that they really could emerge from Chapter 11 as quickly as they appear to be doing. And so I think that helps the president a great deal here to say, look, people said we couldn't do this with Chrysler. There's the roadmap of what we want to do with GM. It's going to take longer. It's a more complex company. It's a bigger company, but what we set out to do with Chrysler, we did, and so trust us on this one as well.
And Frank Langfitt, does it strain credulity to suggest that these announcements are tied together?
I think they are. They have to be tied together. And if anyone were advising them, they would have told them, do this. This is great. Start off with money and say, listen, you did. No one believed us. We did it. Now there are a lot of people who feel that they trampled the rights, the legal rights of a lot of these creditors. A lot of bankruptcy experts feel that way. But Mr. Obama delivered on what he said he would do. And so this gives him, I think, a lot more political capital.
And let's see if we can go ahead now to David Wilna up on Capitol Hill. And David, as you listen to this, there is going to be reaction in Congress, I assume, a sigh of relief from the members of Congress and the senators from the upper Midwest. And, well, maybe a little more pain expressed by members of the minority party.
Yes, indeed. There is pain already being expressed by one Republican senator. Bob Corker of Tennessee is lamenting the fact that there is a plant that's been used to make Saturn vehicles in Spring Hill, Tennessee, that is going to be not shut down, but in effect idled, furloughed for a period. There are other states that were key swing states through the upper Midwest in the last election that went for President Obama: Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, and these are states where if things go well with this bankruptcy plan, I would expect next year Democrats will be reminding voters of that. If things don't go so well, you're going to see Republicans saying this is what happens when you have the government meddling in American capitalism, that you have government motors and President Obama being the new president and CEO of GM, as the Republican National Committee put it this morning in a new web video that they just put out. So this is a politically very volatile kind of bet that President Obama is making, and it's one that could have consequences next year in Congress.
David, it's fair to ask, was there a Republican alternative?
There was not really a Republican alternative, and you have to think that if John McCain had won in November, what would he be doing today with the prospect of GM going under? And I think last December, when there was a lot of talk about what to do about saving the auto industry, you saw a lot of Republicans saying maybe bankruptcy is the best way to go. And while they didn't talk about a $30 billion subsidy to ease them through that bankruptcy, they did think that reorganizing and saving the industry was the thing to do. Nobody talked about letting it all go under. And I think that no party would want to have as its legacy the death of this major, major U.S. corporation.
And this clearly has been part of the White House calculation, as I'm looking at you, Scott Horsley.
Well, yeah, and one of the arguments that the Obama administration would make is, you know, this $30 million that they're putting in now on top
B.
of it.
We have to remember the B, billion.
Did I say $30 billion? And, of course, that's on top of $20 billion that's already been taxpayer dollars that's already been staked to GM. They would argue that the alternative, that a liquidation, would cost the government more in terms of having to take over the pension obligations of General Motors, in terms of the wave of supplier bankruptcies and job losses. So the part of what the president said is that, you know, he's making this investment not because he wants to spend taxpayer money, but he says because he wants to save taxpayer money in the long run.
And indeed to pick up the health care costs, which are now covered by some of these agreements. And as we look ahead, Frank Lankford, we're still waiting for the president of General Motors to emerge. He's due out in about 3 minutes' time at the GM building in New York City, so we'll hear from him. But is anybody lining up to buy a Saturn and Pontiac?
There are. There's some people who actually are looking at these. Let's take Saturn, for instance. It has a good distribution network. The dealers have been quite successful. They created a good consumer, this no-haggle. Remember this no-haggle pricing thing back in the 90s? So they have a good way of interacting with the consumer. If you're looking at some point to get into the United States market, this might be something for you to look at. There are a number of companies that are looking at Saturn. Hummer might be a tougher sell. I think we may hear from Mr. Henderson that there is somebody to buy that product. It's a tough time to sell anything in this economy. You're not going to get high prices for these assets. But I was when I was on the call earlier with some GM officials, they were saying, you know, these were making us a lot of money anyway, frankly, and they were a big distraction. We have to put marketing dollars into a product that doesn't really help us a lot on the bottom line. So again, it's going to be a much more focused company. They're not going to be spending marketing dollars on, you know, all kinds of Pontiacs and the Hummer, which would be terrible to market these days. And so I think, you know, hopefully they will find some buyers and be able to make a little money off them.
GM's European assets, principally Saab and I guess Opel in Germany, the Saab, of course, in Sweden, those are going to be sold off as well. The German government has been very active in working together to try to smooth this process. $400 million they committed.
Yeah, I haven't followed it as closely, but I believe Magna, which is a big auto supply company, parts company, which is capable of building cars easily. They're very sophisticated. They, I think, are very interested in buying Opel, and I think that they're likely to do so.
Along with a Russian bank, I believe.
Yes.
A very interesting deal.
And the strategy here is to leave all of those hard-to-sell brands with the old GM. That'll all be sort of the husk, the shell of GM that'll be left in bankruptcy to be sort of worked through over a longer period of time. And it's the pristine new GM that they're talking about having emerge
in 60 to 90 days. And there's a lot of marketing, and just what Scott's saying, there's a lot of marketing and psychology here, and that is what the Obama administration wants to do with GM is just what he said today with Chrysler, and that is get the best parts of this company wrapped together in a bow and send them out you know, a bankruptcy court so that the public, all they see are those headlines, you know, GM, Chrysler out of bankruptcy, and not be thinking of the old assets that are kind of maybe molding out there and, you know, still in bankruptcy court, because that will help the company in terms of convincing people that it's healthy and that they should come and buy the vehicles.
Bondholders and shareholders, are they going to be arguing with this? President Obama said the majority of the bondholders have agreed to go along with this. Well, that leaves a lot of them who aren't willing to.
Yes, about 46%, I believe, didn't like the deal they were offered. And I think we'll be seeing them in court fairly soon saying that they're not being treated fairly. They may argue that the company should be liquidated. It's going to be not that easy because this is not a purely legal process, as we've seen. You have the government of the United States and a popular president behind these companies. And that carries quite a bit of weight. You remember those bond, some of the debt holders with Chrysler tried to stand up to the Treasury Department, and Mr. Obama called them speculators, suggested they might be being a little unpatriotic, and they quickly folded their tents.
David, go ahead.
Yes, I was just going to say also that we have a Republican congressman from Texas, Jeb Hensarling, who's put out a statement today suggesting that the United Auto Workers were favored in this bankruptcy arrangement over the bondholders and people who have 401k accounts and were counting on revenues from GM for their retirement, and saying that the Obama administration has strong support among the UAW, and this is something that should be investigated. I'm sure we're going to hear more calls similar to that.
And of course, that same argument was made in the Chrysler bankruptcy, and I think, you know, most bankruptcy experts would say that that's absolutely true, that the traditional lineup in bankruptcy court in which workers are unsecured creditors and last in line was reversed in both of these deals.
And actually, right? The Obama administration had to sweeten that deal for just the reason that David points out. UAW was going to get more than bondholders in this process. And so when they couldn't get enough bondholders to sign on, they said, well, listen, we'll give you 10%.
And let's go to New York now to the General Motors building and to Fritz Henderson, the president of General Motors.
Joe, are you going to give me the sign? Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the General Motors building in New York. As normal, all of the things that we'll have to say and answer in the Q&A will be covered by the safe harbor language. In addition, we'll be taking some questions after Fritz has some brief remarks. We'll take questions both here in the room and from those of you on the telephone. And with that, let's get started with our president and CEO, Fritz Henderson.
Thanks, Steve. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us on a difficult but very important day for General Motors Corporation. You've all heard President Obama's comments, received copies of GM's press release. So let me offer a few observations before opening it up for your questions. Today marks a defining moment in the history of the General Motors Corporation. Our agreement with the U.S. Treasury and the governments of Canada and Ontario provide a fast-track plan to form a leaner, quicker, more customer, completely product focused company, one that's more cost competitive and has a competitive balance sheet. The plan incorporates the terms of our recent agreements with the UAW and the CAW, as well as has received the support of a substantial portion of GM's unsecured bondholders. This new GM will be built from the strongest parts of our business, including our best brands and our very finest products. We will have far less debt, fully competitive labor costs, and the ability to generate sustained and positive bottom-line performance. The new GM will have a significantly stronger and healthier balance sheet, which will allow us to better support our brands and products through investment, increase our investment in new technology, and be able to weather difficult times. Initially, the new GM will be owned primarily by the U.S. Department of the Treasury, the governments of Canada and Ontario, the UAW's Post-Retirement Healthcare VEBA Trust, and the unsecured creditors, largely the bondholders of the old General Motors. To implement these agreements and formally launch the new General Motors, it was necessary to enter a court-supervised process, which we did earlier this morning with the full support of the U.S. and Canadian governments, the UAW, the CAW, and with the support of a majority of GM's unsecured bondholders. While our preference was to create a new GM through other paths, and you heard me say this many times, what was and is the most important thing to do is to get to our destination restructure General Motors permanently, and get there fast. The 363 sale we're pursuing provides a powerful tool, and in fact an array of tools, to accelerate and complete the job of reinventing General Motors Corporation. The court-supervised process also offers strong safeguards to our customers and our business until GM, or the new GM, is launched as an independent company, which we expect to happen in 60 to 90 days. The actions we need to take to launch the new General Motors also include a number of extraordinarily difficult steps. Especially tough are the actions to close additional plants and further reduce our U.S. hourly and salaried employment. I want to express my sincere and heartfelt appreciation and thanks to all who have sacrificed so much in this regard, who have sacrificed in the past and will sacrifice in the future, including our dealers, suppliers, retirees, plant communities, as well as those who will continue to invest and, in fact, share the sacrifice in the future and in the days ahead. This includes very serious sacrifices and the other unsecured creditors of General Motors Corporation, whose recovery will come in the form of stock and warrants and reminds us of the importance of delivering in the future so that they get a recovery on their investment and they're able to reduce the amount of damage that they've sustained. It's the job of management to maximize the return on our stock by producing the results, including generating cash as soon as possible to invest in our business, to grow, to be product-focused, and, in fact, to reward the confidence of the taxpayer, the taxpayers of the U.S. and Canada, but of the very parties that we're asking to sacrifice so that there can be a new General Motors. In the meantime, GM remains open for business. In addition to marketing and selling our cars and trucks, we will continue to honor our warranties, service our products, and support our customers. Importantly, our product launches and technology programs remain on track. In fact, a key part of our new agreement with UAW, for example, is our intention for the new General Motors to build a new small car here in the United States and to do so profitably. Also, all of our business operations are continuing without interruption in Europe, Latin America, Africa, and the Middle East, and in Asia Pacific. In fact, none of our operations outside the United States are included in the U.S. court filings or court-supervised process, and these filings have no impact on our plans and operations, again, outside the U.S. Today, GM Europe announced that it has secured a memorandum of understanding with Magna International and has received the support for a bridge financing package of 1.5 billion euro from the German government. And we're very appreciative of the professionalism and the dedication and support of the Magna team, and we're extraordinarily grateful for the support we've received from the German government. This action, the series of actions, isolates our European operations from the court-supervised process in the U.S., and GM Europe will continue to operate as normal, just as we will in the U.S., as it completes its restructuring and we complete the negotiation of the definitive agreements with Magna International. Those negotiations are ongoing, but in the end, we anticipate that the new General Motors will maintain a substantial but still minority stake in the assets and the businesses that we commonly refer to as our Opel and Vauxhall business in Europe. To our customers, we appreciate the confidence that many of you have placed in us over the years. Going forward, we intend to offer you nothing less than best-in-class cars and trucks, and even better service than before. And to those of you who have never tried a GM vehicle or have tried one and given up on us, we look forward to the chance to win your business and earn back your trust. Give us another chance. The GM that many of you knew, the GM that, in fact, had let too many of you down, is history. Today marks the beginning of what will be a new company, a new GM, dedicated to building the very best cars and trucks, highly fuel efficient, world-class quality, green technology development, and with truly outstanding design. And above all, the new GM will be rededicated in our entirety as a leadership team to our customers. A number of our cars and trucks, from the Chevy Volt, the Buick LaCrosse, the Chevrolet Camaro, and Equinox, the GMC Terrain, and the Cadillac SRX, amongst others, are already world-class or, in the case of advanced technology, are breaking new ground. We need to make sure that all of our products are world-class, and that will be our focus going forward. The days when General Motors would have 15 launches, of which we would count on 5 or 6 of them being hits and the rest of them being okay, are history. We need to make sure every single one of our vehicle launches is an outstanding car or truck. Finally, on behalf of the entire GM team, some sincere thanks are in order, starting with President Obama and his Automotive Task Force of the U.S. Department of the Treasury, and especially the American and Canadian taxpayers for the opportunity that's being provided to us to reinvent General Motors. We know we need to prove ourselves and to do it every day, and we will. And we will do it right, and we will do it once. From here on, we move up. This is not the end of General Motors, but the start of a new and better chapter, one that needed to happen and one that begins today. As we move forward, I want to continue to put a high priority on making sure we're open and transparent. One way we'll do that is through increased use of web chats and other information sources, and you'll be seeing and hearing a lot of me. I'll kick things off later this week on Thursday, followed by a steady stream of GM leaders available to answer questions and talk about our progress. Thank you very much for your time. With that, let's open it up for questions. Thank you.
Yep. We're going to start over here on the right with a question from TV crew from Mexico. Can we get the microphone to this young lady right there? Right behind you is the microphone.
Yes, good. I would like to ask you, you say you're not going to close plants abroad, but what will be the impact? And is this going to be temporary for these 60 days that you guys are going to be restructuring the company? How will this affect Mexico that has 13,000 employees from GM and 4 plants?
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes.
Our Mexico operations are not included in the U.S. filing. Our Mexico operations, like our operations in the U.S. Canada, are being affected today by substantially reduced levels of demand. And so, therefore, as we've reduced the level of capacity and reduced our level of production to equate with the level of demand, we've seen an impact of Mexico, obviously, as well as in Canada and the U.S. That's been a function of the market. But let me just reinforce, our Mexico operations are not part of the U.S. bankruptcy process, are not intended to be, and we expect, and that they are a part of the new General Motors going forward. Thank you.
Let's go over to Phil LeBeau on the other side.
Hi, Fritz.
Hey, Phil.
Right now, people around the country and around the world are watching this press conference. And a lot of people are probably saying, you know, we've heard this from General Motors in the past. We've heard about the plant closings, the restructurings, that there's a new day approaching for GM. How should the American public look at this today and say, we have confidence that this is the finally GM's getting it right? How can you convince people that this is the last time GM will have to restructure?
Well, I'll say at the beginning that the only way to convince people is to produce results. But let me at least try to answer your question sitting here today. If I think about this business and being successful in the business, there's never been a successful turnaround done in the automotive business in its history without having success on both the product and the revenue side of the business and getting your costs right. Nobody ever gets to do a turnaround with one or the other. You get to do both. If I think about the situation we found ourselves in, the work being done on restructuring the business, the work that has been done and the work that we've done recently with our partners and the sacrifices that are being made, I think, Phil, we find ourselves in the position where we feel confident that we are competitive and we will be competitive from a cost perspective. The second is the impact on our balance sheet, the leverage, the various claims on the company really were to a point where just untenable. We're solving that problem. So we're getting the issues in the operations behind us. We're getting the issues within the balance sheet behind us so that the leadership team can spend the time where it needs to spend the time, which is on products and on customers. Share of mind, share of time in a day is an extremely important thing for a leadership group. And I think what this does is allow us to permanently address problems that we have not been able to permanently address until today. And so I think we can say that when we exit this process and the new GM comes forward, we will have taken some of these historic problems, addressed them in a permanent way to allow us to spend our time on where we should be spending our time: products, customers, reinventing the technology. And then we have to prove that that the investment and the confidence and the sacrifice of people are worth it. So I do think that there is a very different approach here, and one that addresses some of these traditional chronic problems in a permanent way, and frankly, frees us up to focus on exactly what we need to do to win. Thank you.
If you could identify yourselves when you go to speak. Mickey Maynard, you will go next here.
Hi, Mickey.
Hello, Fritz. I'm Mickey Maynard from the New York Times. You're in a different position than any other General Motors chief executive. You're the first one that's ever had to file for Chapter 11 protection. You will have a new chairman, although you already know him, Kent Kresa. You will have a chief restructuring officer. What will this mean to your role running General Motors? I know everyone is emphasizing that you will run General Motors, the government will stay out, but your role has changed, and how do you view that?
Interesting. As I came up from our offices here, there's a painting there of Mr. Sloan, Alfred Sloan, this morning. And I see paintings in our building in Detroit, and I ask myself the question, well, I wonder what he would do if he were in my shoes. And he never was, although at the beginning of General Motors, there was a crisis.
That's right, Billy Durant.
Exactly. And what he did is he did his job. He led the company through it. And I would say that if he were sitting here today, he'd say, do your job. And so if I look at what my job is, yes, we have a chairman. Ken is the interim chairman. He's repopulating the board. We'll have a world-class board. I personally am a big believer in separating the chairman's role from the CEO's role. I've got my hands full running General Motors, let alone running the board of directors, so I'm very appreciative of that and the job that Ken is doing. Working for Ken is a pleasure, and working for the General Motors board of directors has been a pleasure. An exceptionally hardworking board. With respect to the government and the major shareholders, you heard the president. Certainly the only thing I can tell you is the Automotive Task Force has been rigorous in its analysis and basically dissecting our plan, but with no real interest in running our business. They basically said, you need to run your business. We should hold you accountable. The board of directors should hold you accountable. We're fine with that. I'm fine with that. I couldn't ask for a better environment. So, yes, it's different. But I would say that leaders of the past at General Motors, were they in my shoes, would be doing exactly the same thing to lead the company through the situation. And in terms of the change in governance, I think, Mickey, I'm quite confident it's going to work out just fine.
Fritz, we'll go to the back row here.
Alan Chernoff from CNN. Your predecessor had said that bankruptcy is not an option. He clearly was concerned about GM losing market share. Are you concerned about that? And can you also put that in the context of your target of being profitable if auto sales are just at 10 million units a year?
Well, so there's, I think, a 3 or 4 part question in there. So let me see if I can't take them apart. First, when I look at the situation in the market today and the possibility of losing market share and the possible erosion of sales through a bankruptcy process, the most important thing that needs to happen is we need to move fast. Speed is of the essence. I can assure you that we've gotten ourselves ready to move fast. And the 363 process and the tools that come with that, with the support we have, we're quite confident. There's always risk, but we're confident that we will move fast. Not with a sense of urgency. I'm talking about pure, unadulterated speed. Obviously, the process is driven by a court-supervised process, but with the team of people and professionals that we have, I'm quite, we're confident that, you know, we'll face this and we'll move through it fast. The second thing is we're open for business today. We're providing customers outstanding products. GMAC is in business providing customers financial services, wholesale financing for dealers, retail financing for customers. And in fact, we feel very good about the support of GMAC through this process. So that would be a second thing. Third is we're planning to run our business in the ordinary course. We have a series of first day motions later today that we expect to be approved. The court needs to consider it, obviously, but if approved, would allow us to run our business in the ordinary course, and we move fast. The issue.
That's the president and CEO of General Motors, Fritz Henderson, at a news conference in New York. And, well, if you joined us late earlier today, General Motors declared bankruptcy. Just within the hour, we heard President Obama announce that the United States government is going to be the 60% shareholder minority stakes being taken by the government of Canada and the government of Ontario, the province of Canada, which where all the GM plants are in Canada. The cooperation also of the German government taking a major role in restructuring General Motors' European divisions. And then the promise that General Motors will be out of bankruptcy, a new, leaner, meaner General Motors within 60 to 90 days before the summer is out. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Frank Langford is here. He covers the auto industry for NPR, and also Scott Horsley, NPR's White House correspondent. And Frank, a term we may not be familiar with, a 363 sale?
Yeah, it's actually fairly common in bankruptcy. What it allows a company to do is split up the assets, the unattractive assets, in this case, Saab, Saturn, Hummer, Pontiac, and leave them in bankruptcy court and take the best assets and then sell them out of court, ideally, in this case, quickly. It's a consumer product company that relies on confidence. And so this happens quite often, and they're using a part of the bankruptcy code that General Motors thinks is clearly very important for them to be able to get out quickly and survive.
And this was the same strategy that was employed in the Chrysler bankruptcy, and it did work in the sense that they were able to get out very quickly.
And are getting in the process of getting out of bankruptcy just 30 days after they went in, though, as we've repeatedly heard today, Scott Horsley, the General Motors, a very more complicated and much larger company, at least as it stands now. Tens of thousands of jobs are to be lost. Plants are to be closed in or put on furlough in, I think, 9 states across the country. This is an enormous financial and political risk for the President of the United States.
It is, and the calculation that he has made is that the risk of doing nothing, of simply allowing the company to go under in an uncontrolled bankruptcy or to fold would be even more costly.
In a symbolic move, along with the very real move of going into bankruptcy court, the Dow Jones Industrials today removed General Motors, along with Citigroup, from the Dow Jones 30 Industrials that you hear about on just about every newscast, every hour on the hour. And on the day that General Motors declared bankruptcy, which you would think would be the apocalypse for American industry, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, up the last time I glanced, 218 points. Well, obviously, Frank Langfitt, this was not unanticipated.
This has been anticipated for a long time. You didn't need to be a financial analyst to kind of see where this was headed a number of months ago. You know, you were just talking to Scott a moment about the risks for the president. You know, really for General Motors, one thing that really struck me that Fritz Henderson just said is give us another chance. And what he's saying is give us another chance as a company, give us another chance, drive our cars. Of course, people in the United States have seen a lot of problems and a lot of mistakes by General Motors, and this really is probably the company's last chance. I don't think there's a lot of stomach for pouring more money in, and as we have heard in our discussions with the White House, they say this $30 billion or so, this is it.
Mr. Henderson just said, we will do it once and we will do it right. That remains to be seen, but as you say, Frank, there is going to be very little stomach for more billions into a company that has absorbed $50 billion after the $30 billion additional. And that is on top of what the government is providing to GMAC, a separate company, though it used to be part of GM too, which is providing financing for the many thousands fewer auto dealers around the country to fill their lots with vehicles and then to provide the financing for a lot of people to buy those companies. The United States government is now going to be guaranteeing warranties and parts and service. You practically expected the President of the United States to come out and show the brand new Chevrolet Volt or some other vehicle today. It was an extraordinary day in American industrial history. The United Auto Workers, a much smaller and humbled organization too. We're going to have much more on this all day long here on National Public Radio. So stay tuned for more coverage of the bankruptcy of General Motors and the emergence of its new major stockholder, the United States government. Frank Langfitt, Scott Horsley, thank you all very much. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3, Urbana. Good morning, I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us on, as you just heard, The guys from National Public Radio say to be a pretty significant day in the history of American business, with the GM declaring bankruptcy and the president declaring that the United States would be taking a major stake in that company. Remains to be seen exactly how all of this will play out. We thought we'd take a little bit of time here. We have maybe about 15 minutes left of the time that we would have customarily here on Focus 580 to give you the opportunity to give us some reaction to what has happened today. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Those are the usual numbers. I'd like to mention that the programs that we had scheduled for this morning, we will do a little bit later on this month. On the 26th, we'll talk with Beryl Satter. She's an historian from Rutgers who's written a very interesting book about the effects of predatory lending on African-American homebuyers in Chicago in the 50s and 60s, what that meant for the black community. The book is titled Family Properties, and it's very interesting because her father was very much involved in this. He was an attorney who really battled these unfair and some people might indeed say illegal, if not certainly immoral, lending practices and what they meant. She's written all about this in a recently published book, and so she will be talking with us on the 26th. And then also we will reschedule the conversation we had planned with Jay Taylor. He is an associate, research associate and scholar at the Fairbanks Center for Chinese Studies at Harvard, and we will be talking with him about a book that he's written about Chiang Kai-shek. And the interesting there, he makes the argument that perhaps it's time to reassess Chiang. At least he said that as a result of writing the book, he reassessed him. So we'll have that coming up for you on the 10th of June, so just a couple of weeks away. We're here this morning here, and again, do have a little bit more time to fill, about 15 minutes of our usual time. And so I'm certainly interested in your reaction to today's news events, the bankruptcy of GM and the response of the U.S. government. So you can give us a call. The number here in Champaign-Urbana is 333-9455. And we do also have that toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-WILL or 9455. We are starting out here with caller in Champaign County on our line number one. Hello.
Hi, I figured why not. What I heard about on an alternative source yesterday is that the Chrysler deal has a no-strike clause that goes to 2013, and the GM deal has the UAW signing a no-strike clause till 2015. Obviously, they don't want to kill the goose now, but it seems that that's an awful long time to look ahead, and it seems like it should, if there is profits, that they should be shared. There's also some kind of thing written into the language of the deal that there's a reopener for wages, and I guess whose pressure it was, they wrote in the fact that they have to look at the prevailing wage, as it were, in the other plants around the country, the typically non-union ones in the South, highly subsidized by states and even some federal subsidies that those plants were put in. So it's seems like it's a very sad day for labor in this country with this deal. And the people that blame labor for the problems to start with, I think, are really looking the wrong way. I've actually heard that GM and GMAC got involved in some of these new financial dealings, and that part of their cash crunch is due to the fact that they made bad bets on various derivatives and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I'm bringing that up, it seems to me that there's a lot of money that's been wagered on this act, the bankruptcy of GM. In this credit default swap market, and I'm wondering whether that may cause some kind of ripple effect in some of the financial institutions and the people that are handling that exotic kind of paper that amounts to trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of these side bets and wagers. It's I think we're still in quite a thicket, I guess I'll say, and I'll let some other people.
Well, just before you go, I'm really curious because I mean I've only read a little bit so far this morning about this. I'm very interested in your said that one of the details was that the unions were agreeing for a period of years that they wouldn't strike. I certainly haven't seen that
in anything that I've read. Where was it that you saw it?
I heard it on the Pacifica station out of the West Coast, an analyst at Labor Notes, a woman named, I guess her last name was Slaughter. If you want to give her a call and get outside the union leadership point of view, she was also complaining about another capitulation by labor, which has to do with guest workers that some of the big Change to Win people have signed off on. This is a digression, but she was talking about another category of capitulation by the labor leadership towards accepting like a Bracero program, which was a disaster the first time around. Anyway, it's somebody with Labor Notes.
All right. Well, thanks.
Okay. Good day.
Other questions, certainly welcome. Again, we have about 10 minutes left, and this is our customary time for Focus 580. We heard this morning from President Obama about the United States' plan to take a major stake in General Motors and providing an additional $30 billion in money, which brings the total U.S. commitment to the company to $50 billion. We also heard a little bit from the president and CEO of General Motors, Fritz Henderson. And he was speaking at a news conference in New York, and I'm sure that we'll be hearing more on that throughout the day. He said that the new General Motors, the one that will result after the bankruptcy, will be a leaner and quicker company that's more focused on its customers and its products. He said the new GM will be built from the strongest parts of its business, including its best brands and best products. The company plans to focus on four core brands, Chevrolet, Buick, Cadillac, and GMC, and get rid of four others. Already the plan to get rid of Pontiac, that had been announced, and I think it was pretty clear that they were interested in trying to get rid of certainly Hummer and Saab and Saturn, and they do apparently seem to be some people around the world that are interested in perhaps picking up some of these parts of Chrysler. We also have heard about now apparently the emergence from bankruptcy of Chrysler, or perhaps they're just right on the verge. That comes with the deal between Chrysler and Fiat. So it remains to be seen just how long General Motors will be in bankruptcy. Apparently, at least the man we heard from, Fritz Henderson, president and the CEO, said that perhaps he was looking at a time frame of something between 60 and 90 days. I don't know if that's overly optimistic. As the president said, he certainly expected that it would be longer than for Chrysler because General Motors is a much bigger and much more complex company. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are our numbers. We have a little bit of time here to open up the telephone lines and just give you the opportunity to express your opinions on the U.S. decision to back up Chrysler. And initially, I suppose, before that, the U.S. decision to drive Chrysler into bankruptcy. It was something that we seemed to be headed for. And as we get closer and closer to today, it seemed to be more and more certain that indeed that was going to happen. Was that a good idea? How involved the United States, how involved should the United States be? Perhaps you have some thoughts on this question, and we've certainly discussed it a couple of times recently on this program about what the government should do, what the right thing for the government to do to try to promote the building of more fuel-efficient cars. Where should the pressure be? Should that be on the automakers to make the cars, or do we have to do something on the demand side to persuade people to buy the cars? Questions and opinions certainly are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Neoga on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello. I was born and raised in Detroit, and I'm sorry, the unions are not totally blameless. It was the collusion of everyone. You know, when I was growing up and my daddy didn't work for one of the big three, we still had to pay the inflated prices throughout the city. The unions always made a lot more money, and I'm sure many did a good job, but many did not. A lot of my relatives just took advantage. But the management took advantage, too. I don't think we can say, oh, the poor unions. They had some of the best retirement benefits that I've ever seen in my life. So I think everyone is to blame for this mess. It's just unfortunate that no one had the courage to say, "Hey, we've got to do something before." And when they did try to do something with the unions before, there were talks of strikes. Mm-hmm. So I feel bad for the people in the unions, but they are not martyrs. They played a role in what has happened to GM and Chrysler and Ford.
Well, do you think, I'm just curious, because it seems like everyone is being asked to take a hit, the company, the workers, the bondholders, the taxpayers perhaps. Is that fair in the way that responsibility has been laid out, do you think?
You know, it is in every other industry. Something goes broke and the workers take a hit. It may not be quote-unquote fair, but nothing's fair.
And you're okay with the idea of the United States becoming essentially the majority owner, at least for a while, of the company?
What else are we going to do? Mm. I mean, what else? We can let them go under, but the ripple effect is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
The whole city of Detroit, my beloved city, is just falling into ruin as it is because of corruption and bad government and now bad business. I mean, Detroit will become even more of a ghost town than it already is. And then this will go on to Ohio, to Illinois, to markets around the world. We've got to do something to stop it. And if you say, oh, this is uncharted territory, well, we're in the computer age. Everything is uncharted. We might as well start thinking from scratch again and using our big brains because nothing is going to be like it was before.
All right. Well, thanks very much for the thought.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate it. Let's go on to another caller here. We have someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I think the government did what it had to do. I don't see where, the details of it one could quibble with, but on the whole, I think we can't afford to see our car industry go down the tubes, and I hope that they've got a good plan that it works, but the track that was on was just going to lead to destruction. But I'd like to comment on the show that you replayed the first hour, mm-hmm. and I heard that author when you first did it in May and then again. And he had about the most extreme perspective. I didn't believe that he was a bona fide journalist. I did go look online and saw that he does have credits with major periodicals and so on. But the language he used was so over the top, and he portrayed GM as the victim of, at one point he said, Fox News hated him, wanted to destroy GM to get rid of unions, and the New York Times wanted to destroy it to get rid of the capitalists. I mean, just extreme sort of language, but there was two points that I heard today that really set me off. He referred to how crazy it was that California could have their own safety and pollution standards. The truth of the matter is that from the late 1960s to the present day, California was that cutting edge in fuel efficiency and safety for the whole automotive industry that we couldn't do on a national level because of the power of the Midwestern Rust Belt senators who would block things in collusion with the countries. But California led the way, and what happened is that they built one car for the whole country, and so the rest of us got the benefit of that. But that this was crazy. The language he used was just over the top. And then one other point that he argued, he made it sound as though every time that the only thing that Americans want to buy is the big boats, the behemoths that GM and Chrysler and these companies were making. He never addressed the fact that from the late 1960s to the present day, the Asian labels just kept chipping away at market share year after year after year after year after year. They had no power in Washington to force people to buy their cars. These were voluntary choices. The market was, in fact, saying that we want smaller, better built, safer vehicles. And Detroit blocked every innovation from Ralph Nader when he did in with the Corvair to the present day. They have fought everything. And so I have no sympathy at all for the management of that company. I feel bad for the communities that are impacted by their poor decisions, but I thought that source you had was the most extreme person. It was hard for me to imagine that he wasn't simply a flack. for the automotive industry.
Mm. Well, he certainly seemed very, very sympathetic and to General Motors, and I don't know if that's because he spent a lot of time hanging out in the company with the people who were running it. I was not entirely comfortable with it myself, but, you know, I guess he's entitled to his perspective. And I guess I would say that too, I'm sure that we'll be looking for some other people who have different kind of perspectives on what's happening with the industry and where it should go in the months ahead, because I'm sure this is a story that we're going to be talking about for a long time.
Well, I'm not critical of you for having him on. I mean, his book is by a major publisher and so on. And one can learn a lot from listening to somebody who's as biased as he is. I think he was entirely too close to the industry.
Mm.
And, you know, he simply was not only selective, but actually misrepresented facts. And the role that California has played has been a hugely constructive role. The rest of us owe a huge debt of gratitude because of the efficiency standards and the health and safety standards that California implemented, and that simply forced the industry, because they didn't want to build multiple cars. They tried that, and that didn't work.
Well,
I look forward to more on this, but I don't criticize you for having him on. It's the sort of thing that I would have enjoyed a lively debate with him. But the language he used was so intemperate in describing positions that he was putting down. I mean, that it sort of stunned me that generally experienced journalists, even if they have a point of view, are a little less vivid used to describe positions they disagree with.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the comments.
Sure.
I thank you very much. We are at the point here where I think that we're going to have to finish, and we have one more person here, and I really, if I do go to them, I don't think I really give them the opportunity to have much time to express their thoughts. So my apologies. I am sure, though, as I said, that this is a kind of story that we'll be talking about again and again and again as we talk about the auto industry and where it's going, how it's adapting to changing conditions, how we can build and produce and sell greener cars, and generally, as I'm sure that we'll be talking about it some more, as part of the kind of continuing conversation that we have been trying to have about energy in this country. And in fact, maybe I'll just mention one real quick, is that later this week we're going to be talking about solar energy, about capturing, storing, and using solar energy. This will be a show that we'll be doing Thursday at 10 o'clock, and we'll be talking with Angus Rockets. He is associate head of the department and professor of materials science and engineering at the U of I. So that'll be Thursday. And also later on this summer, we're wanting to get again into the schedule some more programs about energy, particularly about alternative renewable energy. And so we'll see what we can do with that. And of course, we're always open to whatever suggestions you might have about future programs. You can send us an email. You can send us conventional mail. You can call the listener comment line. We always want to know what you think about the programs that we're doing. Programs, by the way, here on WILL are made possible in part by the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to experience the three-play summer studio series this June and July. More information available at KrannertCenter.com. We are broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of University of Illinois alumni Alice and Robert Campbell. And again, just a real quick mention that tomorrow morning on the program, we'll be talking about recent developments in North Korea. There, our guest will be Douglas Paul. He is a vice president for studies at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington, D.C. He'll be joining us by phone hour number one. And then in the second hour, we'll talk about men's health with Ronald Kachanin. He's a urologist at Carl Clinic in Urbana. That's it for us, but we want you to stay tuned. Up next, much more in the way of news and features and other things. And it's the Afternoon Magazine, the host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we'll talk about diet and nutrition. Our guest will be registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. She'll join us this afternoon following the 1 o'clock news. One of the things that she suggested we talk about this afternoon, at least to begin, diet and eye health. So that's where we'll begin this afternoon following the 1 o'clock news. Let's take a look now at commodity prices in Kansas City. July wheat is trading at $7.22 and a half. That's up 35 and a half. September, $7.32 and a quarter, up 34 and a half. July wheat in Chicago, 670, up 32 and three quarters. September, 695 and a half, up 31 and three quarters. July corn, 442, up 5 3/4. September, 451 and three quarters, up 5 1/2. December, 465 and a quarter, up 6. March, 475, up 5 3/4. July soybeans, 1219, up 35. August, 1176 and a half, up 28. September, 1118 and three quarters, up 22 and a quarter. November, 1079 and three quarters, up 17 and a quarter. January, 1081 and three quarters, up 17. July meal, 391.20, up 870. July oil, 40.29, up 124. At the Merck, live cattle, June contract, 81.35, up 2 1/2. August, 81.87 and a half, up a nickel. August feeder cattle, 101.15, down 60. September, 101.05, down 65. And June lean hog, 62.70.